Welcome to Car Free Conversations. This is a podcast where we talk about making the most of St. Pete without the use of a car. I'm Domenico.
And I'm Kenitra.
And with us today, we have Justin Cournoyer. Is that how you say your last name? I'm sorry, I should have asked.
That's totally fine. It's Cournoyer. It's French, but Cournoyer is fine for the American audience.
Cournoyer sounds much better than the way I pronounce it. welcome to our show. We're going to be talking about an initiative that you organized called the Reimagine I-175 Initiative. But first, we're going to play a fun little game called St. Pete Favorites, where we're going to quiz you. And that's not really a quiz. It's more of a lightning round of your favorite spots in St. Pete. Samitra, why don't you get us started?
Sure. What is your favorite coffee shop, Justin?
Well, I'm a Southside guy, so Southside Brew Bar is going to be favorite on 6th Street and 40th Avenue across from Mullet. Mm-hmm. They're quite good. I think they're like one of the best coffees in the area.
Yep. I do live in Harbordale, so I do go there quite often as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys are getting a Peace General drive-thru soon.
Yeah. I'm very excited for that.
Very nice.
Favorite activity. Favorite activity.
I walk my dog a lot because I have a high energy breed. I have like a Belgian Shepherd. He's like a Malinois Shepherd mix. And so he requires like 4 miles of walking or running a day. So I end up walking a lot through Campbell Park, Roser Park. We brought him downtown a couple times. That and biking. I bike everywhere and bike to work. So I enjoy either being on my feet or on a bike.
Awesome.
What's your favorite park?
My favorite what?
What's your favorite park?
Park? I'm biased. I live in Campbell Park, so our neighbor is named after the massive park in our just to our north. So, and little known fact, there's like a section of the park, if you leave the rec center and kind of walk towards downtown, there's a trail that has this like gorgeous skyline view of the city, and I don't think a lot of people realize that that's like probably the best skyline that you can get, with like trees in the foreground and then the huge buildings and all the cranes, right, of downtown. So I love it for that reason.
I would have definitely questioned your loyalty if you had said any other plant that kind of
park. Yeah. I mean, the waterfront parks, right, are like our crown jewel of St. Pete. We have the longest or the biggest system of parks in like the Southeast or something like that. Something wonderful. So
And
we're like high rated, right, for like the number of citizens that are within like a 5-minute walk of a park or something like that. So
yeah, I think it's something like that.
And there's the Booker Creek goes through Campbell Park as well, right?
It does. Yeah. It goes like kind of from like North Kenwood area and it drains down through the Trop site, through Campbell Park and down into Roser Park, down where you are, Domenico.
Yes. Yeah. I love Booker Creek. Mm-hmm. Your favorite bar?
Favorite bar. I love, so when I first came to St. Pete, and it was like I was a travel nurse in 2017, and I knew nothing about St. Pete. I didn't know anybody here, and I was like, what's like the like grab bag bar, like the with the most like diverse like crowd? So 548 by 548 was that bar for me. And it's still like, depending on the night you go, you're like, what is this bar? It's literally literally every type of person you can imagine in St. Pete is there. And I'm like, this is for everybody. And it's still like my favorite little place in there.
I have to say that's, I think one of my favorite things about St. Pete is that, people aren't afraid to be around people that are different from them.
When
I had a friend who was visiting from Seattle, she commented on how diverse the neighborhoods were. She was like, oh, it's so interesting because you walk around and you see all people from all walks of life in the different neighborhoods. She's like, you know, you can tell maybe, you know, maybe the Edge District is hipper than, you know, this other district. Mm-hmm. But she was like, it's all different kinds of people. And she's like, in Seattle, she's like, you know, neighborhoods are segregated, like ethnically, in different other ways. But have that. And I really like that.
Yeah. We have like a live and let live culture here, which is what I tell people. I think it's kind of lovely. It's like, I'm going to do what I want to do. You're going to do what you want to do. And we're kind of not going to judge each other. I was raised in the deep South. So it's refreshing to not have like everybody like judging what you're wearing and who you're hanging out with and what you're doing on Sunday. Like people don't actually care. It's kind of like a laissez-faire attitude in Florida, which I love, and especially in St. Pete.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's also everything seems really accessible too, which helps that as well. Like when I first moved there, I was like, wait, I can just go to these places without anybody inviting me or anybody like having to be like, oh, like come with me, I'll let you in or whatever, you know, like typically how cities are, but which was also really refreshing for me.
Yeah, we're not very clicky.
Yeah. What's your favorite restaurant in town?
Oh man. I always want like fresh vegetables that I don't have to chop up and cook. So like I'm always wanting Thai food, it seems. So it's hard, well, it's hard to pick one restaurant, but if me and my partner are like super hungry, don't want to cook, we want something like fresh and good, it's gonna be lemongrass.
Yeah. I also love how big that menu is.
Oh yeah, it's huge. And I feel like they give you enough food that you can bring lunch for the next day. You know, you can little doggy bag.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I love about American portions. So I was like, this is a lot, but I'm also getting like two meals out of like this one, like paying once.
Yeah. Or you can eat it all at once. That's fine too. No one's just going to judge
absolutely,
you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Justin, your favorite neighborhood besides Campbell Park?
Oh, I can't say Campbell Park. Oh man. Well, you know, our neighbor to the east and also like part of my commute to work, if I choose to walk to work, I go down Booker Creek, down Roser Park Drive, and it would be Roser Park. It's so cool down there.
Yeah, I love
it. It's like the best kept secret. Well, I don't know if it's a secret anymore, but
I remember when I first stumbled across Roser Park when I was in college, and I like kind of turned into it by accident, and it did feel like I had stumbled upon like a secret, you know. I was like,
there's like a microclimate down there, like it's 40 feet like above sea level, and you can see sea level because you look down at the creek and you're like, okay, there's the bottom of St. Pete, but it's like the humidity from the creek or something. I was like, there's air plants and like vining, like old growth. It's just, it's so pretty. And then the like turn of the century craftsmen's and same thing with Campbell Park. We were developed right around the same time. My street was called Grove Heights because it was a orange grove. And so they sold the lots over here and they would tell you how many orange trees you were going to get when you bought your lot.
Oh, fun.
And I have a cute picture of not this neighborhood, but Melrose Avenue, and there's like all these orange trees everywhere. The history of the South Side is there's just so many cool gems in the South. I mean, throughout St. Pete, but the South Side is there's just so much to learn and so much cool stuff.
I know. Roser Park also reminds me of Driftwood quite a bit.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Like the canopy of trees. And
yeah.
And I run, because I live between Lake Maggiore and the bay, I usually do like a run between the lake and the bay. And so I run through Driftwood, and it's like my favorite neighborhood to go to. Because
we call it Jurassic Park because it's like you go through that big gate and you're like, it's like you're going into Jurassic Park and these big like primordial plant species, right? Like big ferns and so gorgeous, so cool. I think like one of the oldest homesteads was back in there, like from the 18 somethings. Like some lady was living out there collecting rainwater, and like, you know, before anybody lived down here. And she may have been a Confederate. There's like a whole story behind that, and they burned her house down. But
yeah,
a lot of hidden history back in there, you know.
Yes. What's your favorite shop in St. Pete?
I don't do a lot of shopping. I we have like a 4-foot closet and we share clothes, so it's like we don't have a lot of clothes.
Build houses.
But like if I need to go shopping, like a local place. Like I love Atlas, right? For their like super like fun like Florida clothes, I call them, like little short sleeve button up shirts that like you basically have to wear from June to September because it's like too hot for a t-shirt. Do you guys understand what I'm saying? Like it's so hot that you can't have your clothes like sticking to you. Being able to unbutton your shirt. So like cute little button ups from there. Matter of fact, on the down the way a little bit, it's really great too for like men's, like curated men's stuff.
Those are both great options.
Yeah, I love Atlas. And I also really like Michael and Tony. So like I love going and supporting them.
Yeah, and they're opening another location down at the hotel that just got renovated down on Pinellas Point.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sand Sky, Sea Sky, something like that. Oh, I'm blanking on the name, but the one right off of the you know what I'm talking about,
Yeah.
Favorite annual event.
Oh man. Well, you guys did a great job with Halloween on Central. Oh my gosh. Oh, how much fun is that? And like to imagine the Central Avenue with like prioritizing people and even micro mobility, like that was so cool. So love that.
Yeah, I love volunteering for that event. My heart is always
full by the end of the night.
Yeah.
And then tired of work,
but yeah.
It's also my favorite holiday, so it makes sense to, like, I'm just in such a good mood around Halloween.
Yeah. You touched on this. Go ahead, Don.
Go ahead, Samitra. Go ahead.
You touched on this,
but what's your favorite way to go car-free?
My favorite way to go car-free? Well, depends on the season, because, like, this time of the year, I love to walk and bike. Mm-hmm. I work at All Children's Hospital, so I just have to, it's less than half a mile from Campbell Park. It's so close. In the winter, I'll walk through Roser Park, or I'll bike through the Innovation District. In the summer, when it's like 95, I'll take my e-scooter.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have my own little e-scooter that I found on Facebook Marketplace that I love. I think I've put like 1,000 miles on it so far.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that concludes our St. Pete favorites round. That was really fun. Cool. And great, actually, that your answers were impeccably fast. Good job.
I'm a very decisive person, and if I like something, I'm like, this is it. So, but I don't know. I could mention that you guys interview a lot of folks that don't have cars, and so I'm one of those people that I don't actually own a car. I actually don't have car insurance. I have a driver's license, but my partner and I, we share a car, so we just use it basically to go to Home Depot and when we leave town or something.
That's great. I don't have a car, and I have been thinking about getting a truck just so that I could go to Home Depot to pick up stuff.
Just for Home Depot, for all my projects. Or a friend with a truck is even better. It's like that's the best kind of truck.
That's what I do now. Yeah.
my partner and I also share a car because they were like, we don't need two cars. But we do have like a couple of Vespas just in case, like we both have to go like in different directions.
Oh gosh, I love Vespa so much. I had one all through college, and so my story is kind of funny of like why I don't drive. I immigrated here from Canada as in middle school. My parents brought me down here. Mm-hmm. And this was 2001, so right after 9/11, basically we immigrated, and my mom got a H-1B visa. She's a nurse, and it was my dream to also become a nurse. 2003 came and the Patriot Act was signed during the Iraq War. It got rid of pathways to citizenship for a lot of people. So I fell into that like dreamer category. And I didn't have a pathway to citizenship until I was like almost done with college. So I like went most of my life with without access to being able to get a driver's license. In North Carolina, I wasn't able to get a driver's license. So I went without driving, you know, through high school, college. And by the time I was able to get a car, I was like, maybe I don't need one because I was so used to it. And I was like choosing to live in places that didn't need a car, or I got a free bus pass because of my employer. I worked for Duke Hospital as my first nursing job. And they gave me a free bus pass. So I just kind of just kept that up. I didn't really ever feel like falling into the car ownership thing. So
that's an interesting, my story is a little different. Someone hit my car and totaled it. And after that, I was like, you know, I think I can live without this, you know? And I had lived in New York and Seattle. And when I moved back to St. Pete, I was like, I'm going to just live in a neighborhood that's close enough to.
Yeah.
So St. Pete's a very walkable city compared to other urban cities of this size. It's quite walkable. So, lucky.
I have also like lived without a car most of my life. My parents had one, and I grew up in Mumbai, so even like there was no thought of like needing a car because I could get away by taking a train or a bus almost anywhere. And then the only reason I had a driver's license when I lived in Mumbai is like I turned 18 and my parents were like, just go get the test done so that at least you have a driver's license. And I was like, okay, fine. And then I moved to Chicago for grad school. And again, there was no point in getting a car because I could go anywhere on a train or a bus in Chicago as well. Mm-hmm. And I was also like, I am a broke grad student. I don't have money for a car either.
it's so expensive. Having a car is like people's second most expensive thing, like their housing and then their car is number two. So especially with inflation being what it is and people getting into these like inflation shifts and sharing cars. it's a great idea if you save some money on, even if you can live a car-free life or car light lifestyle, that way. So
for sure.
If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Car Free Conversations on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7. We are here talking with Justin Cornoyer about the Reimagine I-175 initiative. Justin, why don't you tell us about what inspired you to become a community advocate and organizer of the Reimagine I-175 initiative? And also, for just to refresh everybody's memory, tell us what I-175 is.
Yes.
Might be 175, 375, 275. So just to clear things up.
Yeah, of course. So I think everyone's familiar with 275. So that's the interstate that kind of connects. If you go south, it connects to 75. If it goes up, you know, the Skyway comes through St. Pete, you go across the Howard Franklin, and then you can connect into Tampa there, and either go, you know, towards I-4 or I-75 north from there. So it's really like Pinellas County's like only interstate, right? That goes through, through Pinellas County. And then 375 and 175 are our interstate spurs. So they're these little spurs that kind of come off of 275. And I like to refer to them as just glorified off ramps. Because they do is just load people on and off of 275. So 375 is kind of at Fifth Avenue-ish area north. And then 175 is Fifth Avenue south-ish, around there. They were built in the late 70s, 77 to 80, I think was the year that they were completed. And so my reasoning for getting involved, talked a little bit before, I'm a resident of Campbell Park. It's one of St. Pete's awesome south side neighborhoods. We're directly south of the Tropicana field, the future gas plant redevelopment, should that be approved. We're just west of the Innovation District in Roser Park. Lived here since 2021. Got to know my neighbors in my neighborhood, and I've learning about the history of this neighborhood, and getting active with my neighbors association and kind of the goings on of the when the city of St. Pete, and discovered kind of a dark history of 175 and how it's different from 375, and that 175 was actually built as a wall, like an actual physical wall of separation that separates Southside neighborhoods like Campbell Park, Roser Park, from downtown. We are, you know, only 3 or 4 blocks to downtown, yet there's this huge barrier of that prevents ease of access for folks that are walking or biking or waiting on a bus. Even for cars, it kind of makes it kind of complicated to access downtown because of this road. And learning about it, I'm not the first person to come along to kind of show interest in this sort of thing. It's I think this is like the third or fourth iteration of this. It's kind of a sore subject to talk about, and it's complicated, and which makes sense. And it takes kind of a while to get up to speed on the history of it and the possibilities of it. But got involved with my neighborhood association, found out that there was city interest, and Ford Pinellas, our planning organization from Ellis County, also recommends this as a priority project for the county, for the city to do, to improve access and to increase mobility throughout downtown. The Downtown Mobility Study, which I believe was published in 2021, made those recommendations. And so I'm just another person living in a neighborhood that's impacted by this wall. I don't have a car, and I would like to, you know, have ease of access to downtown, and it makes it really hard for me and my neighbors to be connected to the city.
Yeah. Like you said, you touched on the Downtown Mobility Study, you touched on the Fowler Pinellas recommendation. And I think as a Southside person, I constantly feel the wall in my way whenever I'm trying to access downtown. There are only like maybe a couple of streets that go through the spur ramp. And otherwise you have to kind of constantly go around it, which, like you said, it literally acts like a wall to keep from Southside residents accessing downtown. What are your goals and objectives of the Reimagine I-75 initiative?
Well, I'm realizing that this is a large project, not massive. Like, if we're talking about a 1.3-mile stretch of a highway, I want to see it removed. I want to see it reimagined. What that looks like, we're going to be working as a community. We're a grassroots effort. We're a bunch of volunteers that are connected to the neighborhoods and the neighbor associations in the city, and the people that are affected by it day to day. But what I want to see personally is a boulevard option, which is one of three options that are possible. So first option is do nothing. The second option is a viaduct, which is a raised highway that you can go underneath, kind of like what 375 is already. The problem with that option is the people that live on the other side of 375, they don't like 375 either. That's another number that doesn't really do much. And that walking under a highway is just like not a pleasant experience. Like, it's not, I don't know why we keep bringing that up as an option, but as an organization, we are working with the other organizations out there, and we know it's an option, so we want to be open-minded, but there's like maybe a version of that that would work. But the picturesque, like if I close my eyes and I imagine what it would look like, I imagine a boulevard myself. So from up above, it comes down to the ground level, 5th Avenue South and 4th Avenue South kind of become the two directions and the flow. And then in between 5th Avenue and 4th Avenue South, there's all this land in between. There's like 26 acres in there. It's a 10 lane wide road right now. And it goes from 16th Street all the way to 4th Street. And we all know that Pinellas County is land is like so valuable because we're on this little peninsula. And so what could those 24 acres become? And in that version, the Boulevard version, there's a decent amount of land that would go for public use. It would be, I think, you know, the city would decide how that land would be used, and it could be used in an equitable way. It could be used in however the people of St. Pete want to use it. It could be a green space. It could be more affordable housing. It could be really anything. I mean, it would be generate a tax base, which, you know, highways don't. The highways are expensive. Highways are expensive to maintain. They're expensive to retrofit. The viaduct option sounds pretty expensive. The boulevard option would certainly be cheaper. And then another benefit of the boulevard too is you can have a tree cover. Yeah. So you can plant trees on both sides. And we all know the climate crisis is here. And the number of days in St. Pete in the summer that reach 95 is increasing. I think they're expected to, we're going to have essentially 3 months of in the future. I think 2040, they're projecting it's going to be over 95 for 3 straight months. And the heat index would be 105 or greater. And so how do we mitigate the heat island effect of all that concrete? And it's, we have to do it with trees. Yeah. So I see trees, you know, lining the boulevard, to cool the city. So that's kind of, was that, did I answer the question?
Yeah, no, you did.
Okay.
You know, go ahead, Dom.
No, I was going to say, no, this isn't a test. Yeah, I think you answered it.
I'm like, I get so carried away because there's just so much to, there's so much to talk about. There's so many benefits and there's so many like talking points that it's like, yeah, I'm going to try to help it make sense for people that are listening.
You were gonna say something, Sumitra?
Oh yeah, no, I was just going to say thank you for bringing up the boulevard option because I also feel like it's the most imaginative and the most kind of useful option to kind of reimagine I-75 as is, I think. And you know, like you said, 26 acres of land to get that back and to imagine like turning that into a park of some sort or connecting that to Campbell Park would be such an amazing use of that land as opposed to just having like 10 lanes of like cars driving on it.
And the boulevard would allow the grid to be reconnected to. So the boulevard's at ground level. So prior to 77, we had, you know, 14th Street went through, 12th Street went through, 10th Street, all these interconnected streets. And Campbell Park, a lot of what Campbell Park is now actually had housing. So like more than half the park had houses there that were connected to downtown. You could walk through Campbell Park on a street through a vibrant, you know, historic African-American community, at the time to downtown. So we're reconnecting that grid and giving people options. So if you come off the highway, instead of having to overshoot your destination by like, you know, 6 or 7 blocks, you can get off on whatever block you live on, saving you time, basically. There would be additional traffic signals, but for Pinellas anticipates like no more than 3 minutes that have been increased to someone's commute time if you're in a car. And it's like if you're willing to sit in your car for another 2 or 3 minutes to just, you know, that sacrifice will give people so much, I think, like so much more interconnectivity and safety and wellness. And I can talk about any of those points until the cows come home about the health impacts of this, the safety impacts of it. So tons of benefits to it.
How are you planning to engage and mobilize the community to support what you're trying to do?
So right now we're kind of in our infancy. I think it's our second month since we launched the Facebook page. We're in the process now of getting the neighborhoods that are impacted by it on board and teaching about the benefits, the barriers and things, and then having them sign our position statement. So we have a position statement that we've written that we're hoping neighborhoods are going to sign. Campbell Park, I think, is going to be signing that soon. Just basically saying we want it removed, we want it reimagined, we want to be reconnected for XYZ reasons. So we're going to be going to all the different neighborhoods that are surrounding this project and talking to them, going to community leaders to talk to them, teach them if they want to learn more or see from residents that live in these areas and how it impacts them, and teaching, getting people to be on board and support us. FDOT, Florida Department of Transportation, secured a grant to study the options. So that starts in July. So mm-hmm. we will be, they're going to be sitting down with us at the neighborhood meetings and the neighborhood partnership meetings to talk about what the options are, what we want. We're going to be there to help guide the folks in the South Side. Also, people, you know, you don't have to live in the South Side to support us. You know, it benefits everybody, I think, if you can reconnect these neighborhoods, it'd be great. So that's kind of it, right? It's just like coalition building, talking to people, engaging with people on Facebook. We've had an amazingly positive response to this. And I think St. Pete, people just get it. Like, they just understand, like, oh, walkability, oh, connectivity, all the things that, like, people love about St. Pete and the things that they love about these. St. Pete was designed as a walkable city.
Mm-hmm.
The City Beautiful movement, I think, had a big impact on the city, right? So they're like, oh, what if we had a huge, you know, waterfront park system? What if we had this lovely grid that would just kind of help people get directly to their destination and be able to walk? You know, like when you're on vacation, you want to be in a walkable place, right? You go to these cities in Europe, you don't want to like rent a car, right? If you want to be able to walk. So people get it. We've got a lot of support. So coalition building right now, teaching people, gaining support, and that's where we're at right now.
This is a wonderful project and wonderful initiative. I'm sure you are getting some opposition or pushback from stakeholders or community members in St. Pete. Have you faced a lot of backlash or like a lot of pushback against it? And how do you address those concerns when you have?
Yeah, so on the Facebook page, there's been some pushback. Most of the time, I think it's people don't understand the full story, like what happens when 175 is gone. Like, I think they're like, oh, you're just going to try to get rid of something, and what's it going to do for congestion, and what's it going to do for hurricane evacuations, what's it going to do for, you know, transit times or commute times for our suburban commuters. Those are like some of the concerns. And we have answers for all of those. For Pinellas, the mobility study, like they have all the data, you know, ready, and it's been a wonderful tool to use. Just show people the data, be like, all right, they looked at it. This is how many people use the road right now. It's at 40% capacity. It's been 44 years. The city has grown quite a bit in those 44 years. And it's still only used 40%. So you're talking about like a 10-lane wide highway that nobody uses. Most people in St. Pete, like locals in St. Pete, don't actually use the interstate first. We just use the grid because it's more enjoyable. Like, there's no need to go 75 miles an hour to Home Depot. I mean, you can, it's fine, but it's just a lot of us don't see the necessity in that. We've had some opposition to that. It usually, like, people get it after, you know, some conversation. So I spend a lot of time explaining exactly what we're doing. And we're not just putting a stick of dynamite in it and blowing it up and then walking away. Like, we're not doing that. So some other folks that have expressed some concern in the past. All Children's Hospital, the 2021 interviews expressed some concern. One big benefit of me being in this group is I work at All Children's, so I'm a nurse anesthesiologist over there. So I take care of the sick kids that come through there. We're a level one trauma center. So we get, unfortunately, we get a lot of level one trauma, which is life or limb. And, you know, they come into the hospital and it's a lot of motor vehicle collisions, right? It's the number two cause of death in children. So it's a big concern, especially in Pinellas County. We have a ton of crashes.
Yeah.
It's one of the worst in the country. So they're concerned about the people that have to respond in those emergencies, the on-call staff particularly that are coming in from further out, and how, if this is going to impact their commute times. Mm-hmm. I've had the pleasure of sitting down with the director of facility services there. I actually sat down with her a couple weeks ago and to talk about her concerns, and she was like on board. It seemed like she was going to be a community partner going forward with this, because the Ford Pinellas study showed that commute times would maybe 3 minutes increase. During the 2021 period, they also interviewed Suncoast ambulance services, and they said they're totally fine with it. Ambulance drivers just want a smooth ride. They're okay with turning their lights on to get through these traffic signals. They just want it to be smooth because they're taking care of the person in the back of the ambulance. They're receiving care while they're in the ambulance, and so getting them there safely is the goal. Working with the partners in the Innovation District to show them that we don't think that this is really going to increase the travel time significantly, and it's definitely going to increase the vitality and the mobility and the opportunity for the Innovation District and the people that live in the surrounding area. It's been like a huge positive outpouring, especially people that live in the inner city of St. Pete. It's a little bit easier to be against it when you're a suburban commuter. Because this road was built for suburban commuters, is to get people in and out really fast, to shoot them to 4th Street, basically. So this highway was built to just get you to 4th Street because that was what downtown was back then. It was 4th Street East, and there was nothing really on the rest of Central. So there's been some opposition from those folks, but basically I'm like, if you're driving here from, you know, Sarasota, and it takes you 45 minutes to get here in traffic going up, you know, through the congestion of Sarasota, and then you get to St. Pete and you have to wait at one or maybe two more traffic signals before you get to 4th Street, like, work with us. I'm like, please, it's gonna be lovely. It's gonna be a tree lined boulevard, I hope so. And you're gonna love it.
It's like you have already waited for that long to turn into your plaza, so you can wait like a minute longer.
I'm hoping this ties, not to be off topic, but I hope this ties into your Straza idea that you guys are working on. I really want to see just like a pedestrian and bicycle focused section of that boulevard. Maybe, like, I don't know if you guys have been to Barcelona, like they do the nice boulevards with like the cars are over here and then the whole middle is just trees and a big old sidewalk down the middle of it for bikes and pedestrians. I could see something like that.
Exactly what you're talking about, because I bike like the wrong part of that boulevard and I got a ticket, but it was very beautiful as I the law on my bicycle.
Or New Orleans for our keep it domestic. They have lovely boulevards. They have like a streetcar going down the middle of with all this greenery and big date palms and beautiful.
How are you raising awareness for the Reimagine I-175 initiative? Locally, a little easier, but I'm curious about, right, people in North St. Pete, they might not even use this, right? So I was curious how you're raising awareness of the project and spreading the word.
So we are in our infancy, but we have a Facebook group or a Facebook page rather. So we post on that pretty often. And we share similar projects throughout the country that are happening right now. Syracuse is getting ready to knock down one of their interstate spurs. So we share uplifting information and comparative projects, and like Providence, we shared a picture of that. Like they knocked it down a while ago, and they had this like entirely new neighborhood that was built and where the highway used to be. For advocacy, reaching out to people, we have the Facebook group, the neighborhoods, just going around to the neighborhoods and talking to people at their meetings. I did get a little carried away, and I did put a bunch of flyers on out in the community, not to litter, but they're paper, so they dissolve. But put them on lampposts and things in the area and things like that. not to be a bad citizen or anything, but do that. But we're looking for more volunteers to join our initiative, and then we might be coming to a neighborhood near you to talk at your meeting. If you want us to come and talk at your neighborhood, we are more than happy to come to talk about it and to have this conversation. Engaging with the community. Ford Pinellas came and talked at Campbell Park Neighborhood Association, which is great. The downtown partnership, those folks, talking to them. We're just getting started. We have a lot of people to make connections with. I have a list of people that I'm like, okay, you're next. Yeah. I want to get the Chamber of Commerce on board as my next big step. Now that I've met with all children, and that conversation is going really well. I'm going to work on the Chamber of Commerce next, I think, because there's so much to be gained from the opportunity with these business districts, like the MLK Business District South. Yeah. Imagine like the traffic flow will be so much better. The two-way street conversion is another piece of this, and it's not a topic of this, but it's related, because those one-way streets were created to get people to these interstates first, and they're incredibly unsafe. It's like 43% of crashes happen on these one-way streets, and they're only 17% of our grid. Just like a ton of people just like lose their lives on these one-way streets. They're not good for business. The people go way too fast. Like even if the speed limit's 30, they're going 65 because it's just the design is just, sure. Not appropriate. And so there's opportunity for business districts to benefit from this. So I've reached out to the MLK Business District. I'm waiting to hear back from them. I'd love to go to their meeting and talk to them and get them looped in too, because this is a huge opportunity for some, local businesses to really flourish with better traffic flow and some, I don't know how to call it traffic, but, people going at a reasonable speed down the street and patronizing their business, and walkers and bicyclists to be able to enjoy these streets as well. The adjoining streets that'll be reconnected. The opportunities are endless.
Yeah. Are there any local government agencies on your list of people to talk to about it? Or have you taken any steps to talk to any of the local government agencies?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the St. Pete Department of Transportation is on board. They're working with us. They've been great. I mean, they're very urbanist minded. They understand the importance of this as St. Pete grows, and the type of folks that we're attracting, the talent, we have a bunch of young people moving to St. Pete, and they want to live in a walkable city that you can bike around in with good transit. They get it. So it's been great working with them. Obviously Ford Pinellas has been, that's our backbone. Where we get all of our data from. We're going to work with the Chamber of Commerce, but City Council, Gina Driscoll is a huge supporter of this. She's our representative down here. Our councilwoman. She's a huge supporter. So, working, and then the future city council person, for her seat, we're going to be working with them as well. make sure that they're on board with it. I mean, the police are actually in support of this too. They came to our Campbell Park meeting and they're like, yeah, this would actually make our jobs easier because one-way roads and fast freeways, you know, aren't easy to easy to patrol, easy to keep crime down. So the police are all about it, and having, you know, healthier, more connected neighborhoods is just great for the police too, keeping the neighborhood safe. And like I said, we have a list. I'm still working my way through the list.
Well, how can we help? Like, how can me, not a council member or police officer, get involved and support this initiative?
Yeah, we're looking for, right now, we're looking for neighborhood representatives to bring this to their neighborhood meeting, bring this up, sign our position statement, or express support. Because we're hoping to go to the mayor this year and city council and just show the level of support that this movement has gained from the neighborhoods and from the people. Because I think that's powerful. If you can be like, here's a list of all these people. We have a petition as well on Move On, tinyurl.com/reimagine175 will bring you to our petition. So signing that just to show the number of people that want this. So that when we do go to these stakeholders, we can be like, here's the people, here's the numbers, let's do it. The money that pays for it is going to come from the U.S. Department of Transportation, most likely.
Right.
So I believe that they're kind of watching as well too. They want to see communities engaged. They want to see the people want it. Cause this administration, with Pete Buttigieg is kind of a once in a generation chance, honestly, right now. There's the bipartisan infrastructure bill. They're writing checks right now and they're trying to do it in an equitable way. And they want to, repair and reconnect these areas that were cut off from the city. And we can get into the history and the racial injustice piece of it. If you guys want to, but the big piece of it is how do we fix these wrongs? And the U.S. Department of Transportation is willing to pay for it. So it's a once in a lifetime chance, to do it and do it right this time. And to right those wrongs. And especially now too, with the Reyes Hines deal, most likely being approved this year with the gas plant redevelopment. It's all coalescing. Yeah. It's all like, it's now or never. It's like, we have the money's there. It's available. We have this massive $6 billion development that's likely going to happen. Or if that doesn't happen, something big is going to happen there. Mm-hmm. Just so much land, publicly owned land there. It's such a once in a generation chance to do this. And so if people are like, oh, I don't know, it seems like a cool idea, it's like it's gonna if you're not directly impacted by it, just imagine that like your grandma or your niece lives in Campbell Park and she would really like to go downtown. It should be safe and it should be easy because we're an inner city neighborhood and we deserve to be connected.
And what's the name of the Facebook page that you've been talking about so people can find it?
So right now it's Demolish 175 Reconnect Our Communities. We're going to be rebranding to Reimagine 175. So it felt more gentle, you know. Reimagine.
Well, and really that's what you're doing. You're reimagining, right? Because it's not it's not like there's going to be a void there. The idea is to replace it with a boulevard, like you say, that is calmer and serves the community better. So reimagining it is a more descriptive way of describing
it. For sure. And just, do you have anything else to add? You have given us so much to, you know, think about and you know, you have laid out such a wonderful plan. And you have painted a really beautiful picture of what it could look like.
I would like to talk about the history of it if we have time.
Yeah.
It's it's sad when you start to learn about it, but it's something that we have to talk about. And as St. Pete residents, we have to remember the racist policies of our past and the choices that were made at the time and the damage that it's done. And it's been a journey for me and for I think we're in like an era of understanding and repairing right now. So basically, big picture, during the 70s, with these interstate constructions and the including the Tropicana site, where the gas plant district and the adjoining neighborhoods there, that was 4,000 people, around 4,000 people that were displaced through these projects, and their homes, their businesses were taken from them through eminent domain for the most part, and they were bulldozed. Entire neighborhoods and communities were razed, and those people, some of them left the city, a lot of them left the city, but a lot of them stayed as well, and they went to adjoining neighborhoods. A lot of them came down to Campbell Park. A lot of them came to the Southside neighborhoods like Carbondale. So if you ask your neighbors that have been here since the 70s, 60s or 70s, or even the 80s, they're going to tell you a story. They're most likely will know somebody that was displaced by one of these projects. And they're like, oh, I had to move in with my grandma. I had to move in with my sister. You walk down my street, you see a lot of our porches were converted to bedrooms because there was 4,000 people that had to be put somewhere. So, and they were promised economic opportunity. There was supposed to be an industrial park built there. It never happened. They ended up paving over almost 76 acres for the gas plant site. 175 was intentionally built as a wall of separation that separated downtown from the south side. And it was built along a racial segregation line. It was built along a Jim Crow era segregation line, a red line. Which our city is still very segregated. I know in the beginning of the podcast we talked about we're very open and accepting and diverse city, but we still are incredibly segregated. And the differences between the zip codes is kind of like the detriments that came with these projects and the displacement and the highway and everything. I could talk for days about the negative effects of it, but asthma rates in Campbell Park are higher than the rest of the city. Life expectancy is almost 15 years less. If you're driving down MLK going south and you make a right, your life expectancy drops by 15 years, which is just a crazy statistic. Like someone living in Snell Isle will live for on average 15 more years than someone living in Campbell Park. Are those things related? A lot of things are. Social determinants of health. A lot of these things are related. The negative piece of it is just really dark and hard to talk about and hard to, it's just worth talking about, you know, and as we try to reconnect our city, when we say reimagine 175, it's almost like we already had it. Like in the prior to 77, yeah. we had this grid, we had this lovely grid, we had these lovely streets, kids playing in the street, schools, churches, businesses, all of that. We had it all. And then we bulldozed it and we put these freeways in. At the time they thought it was the right thing to do. They were trying to revitalize the downtown. The downtown was dying. There was a huge amount of people leaving St. Pete, particularly the inner city neighborhoods in the 60s and 70s. That's a big conversation to have as well as them. They call it white flight, but they were building a white man's highway through black men's bedrooms, basically. And so when we say reimagine, it's like we could go back to having this lovely reconnected grid, these communities that could be connected back together again. So I don't know if I got too dark too fast there. No. it's hard to talk about. It's hard to think about the human factor behind all of that, and like the amount of pain that was felt back then, and a lot of people around still in my neighborhood that are like, yeah, I used to live in the gas mm-hmm. plant, and they bulldozed my house, and I moved down here. So it's a living history, right? And this barrier wall is still there, reminding us of it.
And I think context is important. And I remember reading, I think on the historic gas plant redevelopment website, that the area was like they called it a 20-minute neighborhood, so you can get everything done within a 20-minute yep. walk, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I value, right? You know, being able mm-hmm. to get everything done, but it also is a testament to the community that was there and what we had lost. And so the idea of bringing that back, I think, is a great service to the history and the future mm-hmm. of our city.
Yeah, the you know, a lot of people moved to St. Pete being like, I can live a car-free lifestyle, you know, and that's what draws them here. A lot of people in my neighborhood don't have a choice. I think it's 20% of my neighborhood or more don't have access to a car at all, and it's not because they don't want a car, because they can't afford one. Or they have a disability. A lot of the residents downtown live with disabilities. You guys have interviewed a couple people that mm-hmm. are car-free because of their disability. And so there's people that, particularly in the South Side, yeah. that don't have a car, don't have access to it, rely on transportation, rely on being able to walk places, being able to bike places. And so this project's more for them than it is for, well, it's for all of it. We're all going to benefit from it, but especially those people. And you know, the South Side has some of the highest rates of poverty in the county. And so we already know how to get people out of poverty. You have to give them mobility, and mobility is literally being able to get to places of employment easily, having a bus that runs on time, being able to bike there, having economic opportunity, kids being able to play with kids from other neighborhoods. And so that is, I mean, and how we help the bottom half is it's everything. It benefits all of us if we have more equity, more equality. So doing it for them too, because there's just tons of people in the South Side that I think it's the highest bus ridership in the county, right, is down here. So when we think about these projects and how to get people to where they want to go, we have to almost think more about the South Side, and we need to give more to the South Side, like not just and that's kind of like the definition of equity, right? It's like, don't give everybody the exact same thing. You have to mm-hmm. put the resources where they're needed the most and help the people that need it the most. So it's my choice to not drive as much as I do. I could drive if I wanted to, and that's just a huge privilege. I'm trying to use my free time and my brain power to help with this, because I just feel so strongly about it. I'm so passionate about it. It's why it's so nice to talk to organizations like you guys, because it's just, you guys get it, and it's just so lovely and refreshing to talk to folks that want to see this city get better, because it's getting better.
Yeah.
And you know, there's tons of folks moving here. So we gotta make it a livable city for the future too. We have a lot of challenges coming our way, and
for sure. And you know, I want to go back to you giving the historical context for the initiative as well, because it is important to think about how new the spur ramps are, right? Like the neighborhoods existed before then for a long time, and those neighborhoods were ways to add this quote-unquote convenience to downtown. But we also have to, and the word reimagine says it all, that it's not a pipe dream, or it's not just imagine, it's actually just going back to what it used to be.
Yeah.
Is in reimagine, and which is really wonderful too. So thank you so much for giving us that historical context. It is important to talk about that.
Yeah, it's very important. I'm also going to I'll do a little promo for my neighbor, Josette Green. She does a amazing Black History bike tour, and she does a Hidden History of Campbell Park tour as well. Yeah. Brand new. It's wonderful. So she'll take you into the park She'll take you to, we have this like whirligig pedestrian bridge that goes over 175. Most terrifying thing. I don't know if you guys have been there. It goes over the highway. Like, I don't know. It's not enjoyable. You're just like 100 feet, or I don't know how high up you're like over this massive interstate burn, like the smell of the car exhaust coming off, and they're surrounded by barbed wire. It's just this concrete bridge. And so she'll take you up there and she'll show you, she'll tell you about the history of 175, and it's wonderful. So
those swirly bridges, they truly, I feel like I'm going to take my bike up there and like not have the wherewithal to brake at the right time, and just like I'm crashing down from one of them.
Do you bike up that part? I put my bike on my shoulder and I like, it's just so,
yeah, no,
like, I don't usually,
yeah.
And I don't know if it's ADA compliant, like I need to verify, but like I don't know how you push yourself up a wheelchair in that thing.
I was just gonna say it feels steep,
yeah. And another piece too, like the, if you're, I think about disabled folk or people with limited mobility a lot with this. And I'm like, if you're trying to go MLK, if you leave Campbell Park or Rosa Park, you're going up MLK, and you're trying to go over that overpass, the sidewalk is like, it's like this. It's like three feet. And you're like steps away from cars on this side. And then you have this big, tall fence over here and all of this noise and car exhaust coming at you from the highway. Well, it's just I don't know, we can do better, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I love talk. I could talk about this for hours. I love it. and the thing is, other cities have done it. Like,
yeah.
Seattle did it. Seattle had this awful high, like two-story highway along their waterfront.
It was loud.
And I recently, it was so crazy. And I like went and visited there after it was gone. And I was like, there's something different. Something happened here. And it's, you can see the water for the first time. Boston, right? They did a big dig. Now it's just like a gorgeous like innovation district type thing, right? So we're not the first. It's not like a new idea, it's not a new concept. It does require some money, so we do need to secure that money, but getting the people to show up and be like, you know, we support this, I think is the biggest piece, because government doesn't want to do stuff without asking people if they want it, right? Which is what they did back in the 70s. Well, some people wanted it, right? Because they were like, I want to be able to commute super duper fast from my house in the suburbs to 4th Street, and I don't care how many people get displaced by it. But that was then, and this is now. And cities are for people. Cities are for the people that live in that city. We do need to, you know, make a way for people to commute in and out. And obviously, interstates are good for, you know, economic activity between cities and stuff, but interstates are for getting people between cities. They're not, they weren't really ever supposed to be inside of cities.
No.
That was pretty, pretty silly. That was bought to have. And so, you know, we have to do what's right for the people who live in the inner city of St. Pete. What's going to increase their health and safety, reduce crashes, reduce asthma rates, reduce pollution, minimize these heat islands, increase the tree canopy, like the list goes on and on and on and on. But when we talk about transportation, we need to like really prioritize the people that live in St. Pete. And I think it'll be better for all of us.
For sure.
This has been a great conversation, and I thank you for being on our show. Again, it's the Reimagine I-175 initiative, if anybody wants to look it up. Any final words, Sumitra?
Yeah, Justin, can you plug the Move On petition and also the Facebook page again, please?
Yes. So I made a tiny URL so it was easy for folks to find us. So it's tinyurl.com/reimagine175, and that'll bring you to our Move On petition. We'd love for you to sign it, anybody that wants to go on there and sign it. And then our Facebook is, we're in the process of rebranding, but we are Demolish 175 right now. Demolish 175, reconnect our communities. And we're going to be rebranding to Reimagine I-175, reconnect our communities. And we're happy to come and talk at your civic organization, your neighborhood association, or any meeting that you think would benefit from a business district, things like that. Or even just have me at your cocktail party and I can just, you know, just talk about the racial inequities that existed and how we're gonna fix it. So thank you guys for having me so much. This has been so fun.
It has.
Yeah. Yes, thank you for coming on. We have really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you so much. I'm a big fan of Carpe Saint Pete, so I'm honored and humbled that you guys invited me to your podcast.